What's up, everyone? This is Anthony Pompliano. Most of you know me as Pomp. You're listening to the Pomp Podcast, simply the best podcast out there. Now let's kick this thing off.
Jake Paul is a boxer, entrepreneur, investor, and content creator. In this conversation, we talk about it all. His boxing career, if he would have been a bigger YouTuber than Mr. Beast if he had stuck with it, what he does with his money today, how much money he makes, who else he wants to fight, why he's got beef with Dana White, and much, much more. I really enjoyed this conversation with Jake, and I hope you guys enjoy it as well. Let's get into this episode, and let me know afterwards on Twitter what you think. This episode is brought to you by OKX. They're the world's most powerful crypto exchange, and now the second largest in terms of volume. It offers a comprehensive trading platform with over 730 spot trading pairs, 280 derivative markets, and 1,000 option markets. It processes 400,000 requests per second with 30 gigabytes per second of data throughput and 99.95% uptime. For pro and institutional traders, they've just launched the OKX Liquid Marketplace, which is an on-demand liquidity network with multiple brokers where you can instantly trade spot, derivatives, and multi-leg structures at the price you want while bypassing the order book. They offer up to a 50% discount now, so go to OKX.com to try it today. OKX.com, go try it today. This episode is brought to you by 8 Sleep. The holiday season is here, so give the never-ending gift of deeper sleep. About 2 years ago, I started to sleep on the 8 Sleep, and I sleep on it every single night. It quite literally changed my life. I get deeper and better sleep, but don't just listen to me. Clinical data shows that 8 Sleep users experience up to 34% more deep sleep. It is not a holiday miracle, even though it sounds like one. If better sleep is on your wish list, look no further than the new Pod 3. You can go to 8sleep.com/pomp for exclusive holiday savings and ring in the most wonderful time of the year. 8 Sleep currently ships with the US, Canada, the UK, and select countries in the EU and Australia. Go check them out, 8sleep.com/pomp today. This episode is brought to you by Messari. Your days of spending hours scouring the internet for quality crypto insights are over. Messari is your one-stop shop for all your crypto data and research needs. With Messari Pro, you gain access to exclusive, industry-leading, long-form daily research reports, daily crypto news, advanced asset screeners, and curated sets of charts and protocol metrics. You can try Messari Pro today, and listeners of this podcast will get 25% off the Messari Pro membership by visiting www.messari.io/pro and entering promo code POMP. Again, that's messari.io/pro and use promo code POMP. Navigate the market with confidence with Messari Pro.
Anthony Pompliano runs Pomp Investments. All views of him and the guests on his podcast are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Pomp Investments. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Pomp or his guests as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his personal opinion. This podcast is for informational purposes only.
All right, guys. Bang, bang. I've got Jake here with me. I thought a great place to start would be you started off your career on the internet. You weren't fighting. You weren't doing anything. You're making content. If you had stuck with YouTube, could you have been bigger than Mr. Beast?
No.
No?
No.
Why not?
He's obsessed with it and has like such a deep passion for it.
Mm-hmm.
And so simply just because of that, you can't beat someone who loves it more than you.
Yeah. Were you obsessed with it? Just he was more obsessed, or it was something that you knew was a stepping stone to some other career?
Yeah. For me, it was a stepping stone, and I just did it since I was a kid and I was like good at it and it was making a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked really hard at it. I innovated, changed the game, like, of course, but I saw a gap in the market when I first started vlogging where like people aren't doing this in a dope way. They're not telling storylines. They're not connecting all their vlogs. They don't have a cast of characters. So I definitely was like innovative in that sense because I was good at it, but I knew this wasn't what I wanted to do forever. And there was a point where I actively like stopped doing YouTube just because I couldn't stand it anymore.
Yeah. When you started doing the YouTube stuff, did you have friends that are like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, at first it was just like so early on, like my friends thought it was like funny. Mm-hmm. And we were all like, just go around the town making these crazy pranks and crazy YouTube videos and just like doing stupid shit all the time. And everyone loved it when we would upload the videos and we would get like 300 views, which in high school, that's like damn near the whole high school. And the teachers thought it was funny. The teachers would like play it on the TV screens. And that's really where it all started. And we were just bored. Like my brother and I got a camera and there was nothing else to do in the summer. So we'd literally be sitting there outside and we just started pressing record. And we'd watch the videos back and think it was hilarious. And then we just really just started it as a hobby.
One of the things I see with a lot of people who end up being successful creating content on any of the platforms, you pretty much know, like, hey, this video is going to be viral. This one's not. It was how you guys felt early on. Like, it was almost like this innate ability to understand this is going to play. Or did you have to learn that over time?
Yeah, no, I had to learn it over time. I think one of the videos that we made went viral. And once we got that taste of viral success, we were like, okay, a video has to be this good to you know, get featured on the homepage of – it was Vine at the time. And so it set a standard and a bar. Mm-hmm. And then slowly we realized, okay, like you really have to create genius concepts for people to pay attention here and to share it and for it to get sent around to people. And once we got a little bit of a taste of that, we just attacked that, you know, that formula every single day. And over time, yeah, like now I know what videos exactly will go viral or what won't. But there still is some like randomness to it though, too. Like you can't always predict it to a T, but.
Susan and the YouTube gods got to bless you. You know, the CEO of YouTube, I feel like sometimes the algorithm, they just like you, sometimes they don't. So it's a little bit of a luck of the draw.
Yeah, man. And it's weird now. It's just like super strict. And I saw this coming like a while ago where all of the algorithms were changing. There was so much more competition. And now you have to really like hack the algorithms, and like the first 30 seconds of the video matters so much. It's all about watch time. You know, if you swear in your videos, it's going to go to less people. It's very like PG. Mm-hmm. And
it's a science.
Yeah. And that's the science that Mr. Beast also mastered, and he curates his videos because, you know, you have to watch till the end to see who's going to get the money, who's going to get the prize. But the whole entire time it's fun because people are getting eliminated. Mm-hmm. And so his style of video, you know, you start watching it, it's big, you know, bold caption. It's curated for a younger audience who's going to sit there and watch the whole entire thing. And that's he's a numbers guy. When I first met him, the biggest thing I was surprised about is he just is like mathematician with all that.
Is there a similarity between him studying like game film essentially of other YouTubers or even himself and what you're doing now with boxing and kind of how obsessive you are with trying to be the best boxer in the world?
For sure. Yeah. And that goes back to the passion and the drive and the desire to be the best. And I think in boxing, I started, you know, late. So there's this, I have an uphill battle, and that's where the obsession comes from. And it's a sport that you can never master. And to me, that is exciting because you could always learn something new. Mm-hmm. You could always add to your game. And everyone doesn't think, you know, I could become a world champion.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that?
I know that. I know that I will. And to me, it's just going to be like a fun journey and a crescendo to this already crazy boxing story. But definitely accredited all to that hard work and that people don't realize how obsessed I am with it. Like, I'm really a student of the game. I have three coaches watching me every moment while I'm practicing, and they correct, you know, if my toe position is not in the right spot, the angles at which I attack, how I'm turning my punches over, what combinations, and just down to the finest details, watching back film every single time after sparring, which a lot of pro boxers don't do. A lot of pro boxers, interestingly enough, don't even film their sparring sessions, and even fewer of them watch it back with their coaches going second by second, you know, depicting and changing and talking about what was going on in that film, and then doing that on a consistent basis. And then even watching, I watch other fighters with my coaches, and we just talk about everything that they're doing.
What did your training regimen look like on the boxing side, right? Like, I think I've talked to you enough now where I think I understand you really are obsessed with it. But if you sat down with someone and was like, let me prove that to you, like walk through the daily training regimen, because that, I think that speaks volumes to like the work you're doing when the cameras aren't actually on.
Yeah, yeah. So
you're literally laughing because you know that it's fucking insane.
Yeah, it's insane. I'm like, okay, so on a, let's just take like a Monday in camp at the start of camp. It would be, you know, wake up right away, like have some oatmeal. And then usually we would go to the boxing gym, box for like an hour and a half to 2 hours. And that's shadow boxing, hitting the mitts, hitting the speed bag, maybe hitting the heavy bag, you know, going over, talking about stuff and doing certain drills with the coaches. And then after that, I would typically do a cool down stretch. I have like a stretch therapist for 30 minutes. And then I go into this red light bed that we have with like oxygen to get rid of like my oxidative stress and sit in the red light therapy bed. And then go home, get another meal. Ice bath at home, ice bath hot tub at home, then get another meal, take a nap, wake back up at night, go back in for the strength and conditioning workout, which could usually be like 3 to 5 mile jog plus like a weightlifting session. So it'd be like back and buys, or if it's legs, we're lifting for like an hour and a half. And then abs, we do abs after that, and then neck workouts as well. Neck workouts are like a big part of our regime, just having a strong neck so you can get hit in the face. And then another cool down stretch after that. Oh, and hand-eye coordination too. So we would do like speed drills with like catching tennis balls and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then another cool down, back again into the red light. The red light bed, and then back home, ice bath again, shower, eat, do some business, and then go to sleep.
So when you started, let's say you were at a zero, world champion is a 10. Where do you think you are right now in that kind of journey to being good enough to be a world champion?
That's a good question. I would say I'm probably at a 7 or 8. Probably more like a 7.5, and exponentially growing. Because once you understand the game and you put in those 10,000 hours, which is what I'm like approaching, you can make minute adjustments, and you have the muscles, you have, you know, the cardio, you understand the ring, you're comfortable, you fought in front of 20,000 people. That's half the battle. It's half mental. So mentally, I'm a world champion. Mm-hmm. Physically, the boxing is just catching up. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to be that much longer, but I spar against world champions.
Like who?
Former world champions as well. Steve Cunningham, he was like a 3-time world champion. Chad Dawson, 3-time world champion.
And what happens when you guys are sparring? Like you're sparring against people who obviously are very skilled, who have had great success in boxing. Is it like, oh, cool, I can hang with them? Are you knocking them out? Like, what does that look like? Are they knocking you out? What's happening?
No, I'm hanging with them. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I win rounds. Sometimes they will get a round. But they're not in their prime, right? Mm-hmm. So they're like they're former world champions. But I've gone up against the best of the best, like current people who are in the top ranks, and I always hang with them. And people like can't believe that. You know, you even see like when I announced I was sparring with Chad Dawson, all the comments were like, haha, like, man, it must be so nice. Like, Chad's taking it easy on him. Like, if he actually sparred Chad Dawson, he would get knocked the fuck out. Mm-hmm. And
the comments?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah. I read a lot of stuff. I think it's good to know the opinion of everything that's out there. Mm-hmm. And I think I let it fuel me. And I think it's funny because basically what my boxing career has come to is if you can't convince, confuse, right? So like they, the people who watch me can't even fucking believe that I'm beating these people. So they say it's rigged, right? Mm-hmm. They say my fights are rigged. They can't believe it. So the fact, and I understand where they're coming from because this shouldn't be possible. No boxer in the history has done this. No one's taken on this tough of opponents this early on in their career. They usually build up 25 fights, then fight someone tough for the first time. So I take it almost as a compliment where they seriously like can't believe mm-hmm. how good I am. Mm-hmm. And so they make up lies. And
are they rigged?
No. I would go to jail. And it to me, it's and they put like Showtime's reputation on the line too. Mm-hmm. And Anderson Silva, like you really think the GOAT of MMA is going to take a couple extra dollars to look like get embarrassed in front of the world? Mm-hmm. Like
these are guys who have pride, who they're going in there because they want to win. And is there an element of like some of the people you step in the ring with, they're like, all right, fine, I'll take, like, I'll shut the YouTuber up. Is that a little bit of what drives some of them to do it?
For sure. 100%. And they all thought they were going to be that person. Mm-hmm. You know, even Tyron Woodley really thought he was going to beat the shit out of me. Mm-hmm. And then they just get matched, they get hit with this kid who is fucking relentless and doesn't back down and can handle the moment. And I hit fucking hard. Mm-hmm. You know, since my first sparring session, the coaches were like, what the fuck? You've never boxed before? Like, how are you punching like this? And so you get in there without the headgear and the 10-ounce gloves, and I'm a real problem to mm-hmm. like for people. And I think every single person I get in there with is shocked. I seen it with Anderson Silva too. I really think he was like, all right, like gigs up. I'm going to be the guy to take this guy out.
Cause he would have been legend status then, right? Like there's some of these guys who, if they're the one to stop you, there is almost like I catapult to the next level. And like, I did it for the sport to some
100%. Like yeah. The MMA community definitely doesn't want me to keep on winning.
Yeah.
And I think the boxing community is changing. Like, I think they're starting to understand that I'm good for the sport, great for the sport, and, you know, bringing new eyeballs and really respecting the sport. So I think the boxing community is, like, starting to change their tune. But the MMA community definitely doesn't want to see me continue to knock out their goats, right? Yeah. Like, Tyron Woodley was one of the best welterweights ever. Anderson Silva was the greatest MMA fighter of all time. So,
what's up with you and Dana White? You guys don't like each other?
I mean, it's nothing like really personal, I guess. I just don't like how he treats his fighters, and he's done vindictive things now to like try to fuck up my fights and to,
like what?
He was basically sending cease and desist letters to my team about like content that I had posted with him in it, trying to get like threatening to sue me unless I took the content down, like promoting the fight basically. And then we think that he was the one to send that video to the commission of Anderson saying he got knocked out in sparring. So that like really like fucked up the pay-per-view and the ticket sales. Like we saw all the pre-buy numbers like tank the week of the fight because everyone thought the fight was off because mm-hmm. Anderson put out or had an interview like months before saying he got knocked out in sparring. And that's a risk. So the commission basically freaked out. And there was rumors that got out and everyone thought the fight was basically going to be canceled.
Would you fight Dana White? Like if it came down to it and whether it was pay-per-view or it was for like charity or something, and it was going to be one of the biggest fights of all time from an audience standpoint, would you get in the ring with him?
For sure.
Yeah.
100%.
Would you win?
Easily. He knows that. Like he wouldn't fight me. Like it would be a lose-lose situation for him.
So you would knock Dana White out?
Easily. Yeah. He was a cardio kickboxing instructor. That's how he started. Like a dude with the microphone, like yelling at people in the classes at like a LA Fitness.
Bro, how long did it take you to figure that out? I know you went deep in the internet for that. Come on, you're a meme lord. I got it. But like, wait, talk to me. How did you figure that out?
No, so someone told me that. They were like, yo, like when I started feuding with him, someone texted me, was like, yo, this guy started as a fucking cardio kickboxing instructor. Like he wasn't even the real person behind the UFC. It was all the Fertitta brothers that did all the hard work and brought in the capital. About this guy just got lucky at the right place, the right time. And then I found the picture though of him actually being the cardio kickboxing instructor, and it's hilarious. But that one took me a little bit to dig up.
Do you agree that the UFC wouldn't be what it is today without Dana, or do you think that he actually got lucky?
No, I don't think he got lucky. I think he's a really smart guy. I have respect for what he did for the sport of MMA. People think I don't like the UFC. I love the UFC. I grew up watching the UFC. I think it's a great organization. They put on awesome fights. I love half of the UFC fighters are my friends. Like, but they need to pay their fighters more. And that's really where the riff and the back and forth came from, because they only pay their fighters 16% of the revenue, mm-hmm. whereas in the NFL and NBA, the fighters get 50%.
Could the math work? Could they pay 50% and make the math
yes,
work?
Yes, yes. Yeah, no, the UFC is the most profitable sports organization in the world.
Got it.
And it's because they pay their fighters like shit. And only the superstars get paid decently. Like the superstars should be getting paid more. But the heavyweight champion, Francis Ngannou, got paid like $600,000 or $500,000 for his last fight, right? Mm-hmm. The heavyweight champion of the world in boxing, Tyson Fury, got paid like $32 million mm-hmm. for his last fight. So the fact that they don't have long-term health care in the most dangerous sport in the world, and these fighters are risking their lives, and some of them could barely afford their gym bills. Like, to me, that's where I want to see the change, and that's why we're working on the United Fighters Association with Anderson, because I know how hard these fighters work and how much they're sacrificing, and it just sucks to see them getting taken advantage of, and like I said, they're the most profitable sports organization in the world because they don't have to pay their fighters. And these fighters are basically in slave contracts. And the crazy part about it is like the UFC fighters, they have to pay for all their own shit. You pay, as a fighter, you pay for your own meals, you pay for your own coaches, you pay for your own sometimes travel depending. Mm-hmm. And so they're getting paid like shit and, you know, they have to pay for all of those things. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, in the NFL, they're getting paid a fuck ton of money and all of their coaches are paid for, their gyms are paid for, their transportation is paid for, their meals are paid for. So it's just this really backwards thing. And
would you fight in the UFC? Like if they gave you a contract, would you fight?
I would if it meant they raised their fighter minimum pay to $50,000 per fight, and increase the revenue that they paid their fighters from 16% to at least like 30 or 40. Like it doesn't have to be 50, but they could literally double fighters' pay and still be the most profitable sports organization in the world. So if it meant, changing and helping the fighters, I would fight in the UFC for sure.
Could you win?
For sure, for sure. I mean, obviously, if I went up against like a champion, but but if I had someone, you know, who was evenly matched and inexperienced, I know I would win. I just have a winner's mindset, and I would take the training very seriously. I have a wrestling background. I know a lot of jiu-jitsu just from wrestling and rolling around on the mats. So I would really just have to learn the kicks because I have the boxing. Mm-hmm. I could definitely get really good at MMA.
I've seen you post a couple of times, Joe Rogan being like basically Jake can fight, right?
Yep.
How important has his endorsement or his kind of positive comments about your actual abilities? Forget all like the bullshit and the marketing and all that, but like your actual boxing abilities, how important is it to win over people like a Joe Rogan or others with big audiences that understand the game of fighting to help change the way that people look at you in the sport?
No, it means a lot and it's needed for sure. And he has so much credibility. I think probably more credibility than anyone. You know, if mm-hmm. there's a t- top three credibility in fighting list, Joe Rogan's damn at the top of it, if not number two or three. And he has that big audience, but he gets it. You know, he's seen more fights than anyone. He knows how hard it is to knock someone down like Anderson Silva, how hard it is to knock out Tyrone Woodley. So he sees what I'm doing, and he's right. Like, he's basically said, if I wasn't a YouTube kid and I was just a young boxing prospect beating all of these people, everyone would be like, what the fuck? This kid can punch. Like, he can knock people out. This is going to be a world champion. But for some reason, they just say, oh, it's fake. Fights are rigged. Mm-hmm. This is bullshit. And I even see people say, oh, Jake is paying Joe Rogan to say this. And, like, to me, like, it just gone. There was a slippery slope of, like, disbelief and people just discrediting everything mm-hmm. that I have worked for in this sport. And the slope is so much more slippery now, and there's really no coming back from it. I think people will just always, some of the people that I call them the sheep, like the people who just believe mm-hmm. whatever they're told or just get swayed by other people's opinion. The sheep will, I think, always be like, oh no, it's fake. Oh, this, like, I don't know when they're going to credit me.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's a good question.
Won't ever.
Is there something that you think that you could do where they'd be like, all right, fine, fuck it, I was wrong. Like, he is good. Is it literally you have to become the world champion and anything short of that is like, oh, we told you he sucked and it was a fad and it was all rigged?
I mean, I think fighting a professional boxer, you know, and I've tried multiple times and they all backed out. So people just still say like, oh, fight someone your age, fight a professional boxer. And it's like, what they don't realize is Tommy Fury is a 10 times easier fight than Anderson Silva.
Why?
He doesn't have the experience. He's never been in a tough fight. He's only fought people who are taxi cab drivers. The dude like isn't tough. He's not good. He's never been hit. He's never been tested. Not only that, he's only fought in 1 6-round fight. All of his fights before that were 4 rounds. So like he's never even gone an 8-round fight. Mm-hmm. So it's like fight a real box. Like this guy is Anderson Silva is a 10 times more of a real boxer with who's been in there with the best strikers in the world. But for some reason, again, the sheep look at the title professional boxer and they think that that person will be better than Anderson Silva. So
is there somebody in the boxing world that you're scared of or that you don't want to fight?
I mean, anyone in my weight class, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah,
like I will go in there and give everyone a run for their money, and that's right now. Mm-hmm. You know, you give me 2 more years, I'm getting exponentially better each year. I have the best coaches, I have the best training regime, I have the best everything around me, so I'm exponentially getting better, and I want it more than all of these fighters mm-hmm. because they have been doing this their whole life. And that they're, I guess, going through the motions and just doing what they've always done. But I'm new. I'm the new kid on the block. I have a lot to prove. People say, oh, you have a chip on your shoulder. Like I have 2 chips on my shoulder, one on each side. I'm hungry. I'm relentless. And I will show the world that I'm a world champion.
How much of this are you interested in making money versus boxing? And I'll give you a perfect example. You could go in your next fight, you could fight somebody who's a professional boxer who like the boxing world would respect, but maybe doesn't draw as much money as say you go and you fight Andrew Tate.
Yeah.
Who people are like, look, he's a 4-time kickboxing champion. Like he's no slouch either, right? But there's way more money probably in fighting an Andrew Tate because of pay-per-view, ticket sales, like the hype that can be around it, almost more of like a marketing event. And that's not to say that the fight itself wouldn't be real, but it would be viewed very differently. Like he's fighting Andrew Tate versus he's fighting a professional boxer.
Yep.
How do you make those decisions? Like, how do you decide, should I do something for the sport of boxing or should I do something that's going to make me money?
I've always leaned on doing something for the sport of boxing and earning people's respect and going with a tougher opponent always. They just haven't gotten in the ring with me. They've pulled out twice.
Are they scared? Why are
yes,
they not getting?
Yes, I believe so. And even now, Tommy Fury is creating all these smoke and mirrors, and he's ducking. He wouldn't respond to my DM. I sent him a DM like, yo, you have the offer in your inbox. Like, mm-hmm. let's make this fight happen for the fans.
And he ghosted you?
And he just hasn't even opened it. And it's like,
are you DMing him right now?
No, yeah. Like, I'm sending you the offer tomorrow. We either need to do this or move on for good, as the fans are fed up. Look at the comments in your tweets. This was a big fight, and now it's on the edge of being irrelevant. Your dad claims you want this. You say you want this, and I want this, so sign up.
And he didn't respond.
And it's like all of these smoke and mirrors. I don't – at this point, I think he's just playing us to just get the brand recognition out of the
who's
beef.
Who's the person that's on like – I call it like Goat Mountain for you, right? Who's the person that if you fight – you're like, I will not, I can't believe I'm in the ring with this person. And like, let's fucking go.
I think Canelo and people, like, we're the two biggest names in the sport and two biggest pay-per-view draws in the sport. So not only is it a massive fight, but because of our styles and how we match up, styles make fights, right? Mm-hmm. So because of how we match up, people going into it, we'll be like, oh, Canelo's going to kill Jake. But I know I can win, and I'm going to give him a hell of a run for his money. And that would be just like an iconic fight to make. And just for the generations, and I don't know, I think it would just shut the internet down. And I know I can win. So
you could beat Canelo.
Yes.
Does he know that? Or you think he thinks he could whoop your ass?
I think he thinks he could whoop my ass and that I'm just a YouTuber kid.
Mm-hmm. Have you tried to fight him yet? Like, have you guys tried to put a contract in front of him?
We've talked to his lawyer, and I think he's getting to a place where he sees, like, how serious I am. Like, mm-hmm. I think at first everyone thought this was a joke and that I was just – my mouth was bigger than my actions at mm-hmm. first. And now my actions are matching up to what my words are. Mm-hmm. And so I think now people really have to take that seriously, and especially if it's a year from now, especially if it's 2 years from now. I'm sparring people that – were in both of their training camps for this last fight, Triple G. I'm sparring Triple G's sparring partners. I'm sparring Canelo's sparring partners. Ellis, like all of these guys. I forget the other dude's name, Sergey. But we're sparring people from both of their camps. Mm-hmm. And they came out to my camps.
This episode is brought to you by Arculus. If your cryptocurrencies are stored on an exchange, they may not be secure. And as we've just seen, your crypto can be lost in the blink of an eye to a freeze, exchange bankruptcy, or malfeasance. Now more than ever is the time to keep your crypto safe and secure in the Arculus cold storage wallet. Arculus knows a thing or three about security. Your assets are accessible through three-factor authentication and by using the Arculus Wallet app and Arculus Key Card. Your keys are generated and encrypted on their secure element rated CCEALP6+. If you don't know what that means you and only you own your keys and therefore your crypto. Keep your digital assets secure and safe from exchange freezes, bankruptcies, and hacks with Arculus. Save 20% through December 10th with promo code POMP. Go to Arculus and use promo code POMP today. This episode is brought to you by Amber Data. If you're a financial institution entering the digital asset class, you'll need access to granular on-chain and market data from multiple venues to power research, trading, risk management, and compliance. Amber Data delivers comprehensive data and insights into blockchain networks, crypto markets, and decentralized finance, empowering financial institutions to apply traditional finance methods to digital assets. Amber Data eliminates the infrastructure setup, integrated challenges, and maintenance headaches to access digital assets data, reducing cost and time to market to enter the digital asset class. Learn more and download their digital asset data guide at www.amberdata.io/pomp. Again, that's amberdata.io/pomp. Go check them out today. This episode is brought to you by LMAX Digital, the number one institutional crypto exchange. They offer clients the deepest pool of liquidity, and they have 100% uptime track record through all the volatility spikes. LMAX Group's liquidity relationships and ultra-low latency technology means that LMAX Digital is the market-leading solution for institutions across crypto trading and custodial services. LMAX Digital, secure, liquid, and trusted. Go learn more at lmaxdigital.com/pomp. Again, that's lmaxdigital.com/pomp.
So when you look at a fight like that, right? Canelo's this massive name, got immense respect within the boxing world. We've seen these, like, I'll call them crossover events. So obviously McGregor and Mayweather are probably the biggest one, where I remember watching them promote the fight and they're like laughing at each other. They're throwing the money. They're like playing this game, which on one hand, you're like, got it. That's part of what they're doing, and they're promoting it well, and people are going to buy this pay-per-view. On the other hand, like, that didn't look like a fucking joke when they were in the ring with each other and they were really punching each other.
Yeah.
And so is it a similar type of draw here where you're very good at marketing, you're very good at using the internet and doing a lot of this stuff? Canelo has a respect to the boxing world, and so like you kind of clash the stories together, but there actually would also be a really good fight in the ring because of the styles and kind of where you guys are both coming from?
Exactly. No, for sure. And I think all of it would just be an entertainment spectacle. And I don't think anyone's gotten into Canelo's head. Mm-hmm. And I think that would be like part of it for me, is I think I could get into his head. I think I would win the mental battle.
You were the robot.
What? Say it again.
You were the robot would get in his head.
Yes, yes, yes. The problem bot.
Yeah.
The big one that follows. Yeah. Yes, yes, yes. the giant robot that you have follow you, Jake.
do you have other robots?
I have two robots.
Both of them are giant ones?
Yes.
Yeah, all right.
One's a better bot. It's the better, I guess, mascot. And then one's my mascot.
What about your brother? So your brother fought Mayweather. And I think a lot of people, when I saw the videos, I'm like most people, I'm like, there's no way these guys are going to fucking fight, right? But like great marketing, awesome, grabbing the attention of the internet. And they got in the ring. I was at the fight and I was like, damn, it's the fourth round. It's the fifth round, sixth round. Like Logan's still coming out of the corner. He's still fighting. And I think it kind of surprised people a little bit. And yeah, there was questions, right? People were like, oh, is it real? Is it not? Whatever. But then to see your brother do that, now he's gone on to the WWE and he's doing things where if you look at like a highlight reel, your people are just like, how the fuck is this guy able to do such athletic moves and so early in his wrestling career? You both seem to be kind of attacking related but different industries in this like fight related game. Is that just because you guys were athletic, or like what is it that has allowed both of you to be so successful?
Yeah, I think it goes back to we've always loved combat sports and we were both wrestlers, but also we're entertainers. And that's why I think like boxing, you know, fits me perfectly. Everything about it, not just the fight, but I'm an athlete at heart. That's what I started out doing. And people tend to forget that. I was jogging before school, you know, at 5 a.m, staying after wrestling practice to lift weights. I won the hardest worker on my wrestling team award. My brother was a state third place at state as a wrestler his senior year, all state football. So boxing fits me perfectly, and the WWE fits Logan perfectly. He can backflip. He could do the splits. He's a quick learner. He's acrobatic. Even when we were kids, he was really good on the trampoline. Like he could do all the tricks. And so that's why he feels comfortable flying in the air. We literally had like a treehouse as a kid that we would jump off of onto the trampoline. And so the kid was practicing for this his whole damn life. And for me, I love the outfits, the dressing, the fight night, the walkout. So I think we both finally just found our passions, and Logan fits perfectly within the WWE and I fit perfectly within the sport of boxing.
Let's talk money. How much money do you expect to make on a yearly basis? I think the public number is 50 million. I think it's pretty accurate of what you made last year. Is that something where if you keep going and doing what you're doing, you think that you'll be making 50 million bucks every year just fighting? Or like, how do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, that's like if I fight like three times a year, which is like a really busy, busy schedule. And it's proven to be harder now to get people into the ring to sign up to fight me. But yeah, if I can keep that pace of fighting three times a year, then that should be the number. And that's with like big fights. That's if there's no like mega fight,
where you could earn 50 million for a single mega fight.
Exactly. But the number seems to be like $10 to $20 million per fight, depending on how it performs.
Okay. What do you do with the money? like, you and I have talked in private. You're not an idiot. It's not like you're taking the money and going to the club and just throwing it out, you know, and letting anyone grab it. What are you actually doing from an investment standpoint? Are you making those decisions? Do you have a team that's doing that? How do you like operate with money once you've made it?
Yeah, it's a good question. Definitely doing a lot of investments through my fund. I'm the biggest LP within my own fund, and we invest into so many different types of companies, a lot of stuff around crypto, but also just consumer products. So put a lot of money there, put a lot of money into things like ETH, Bitcoin, BNB, and yeah, just have always done that for years now. Was very early on. I bought Bitcoin when I was like 16 years old.
Why'd you buy it?
My friend told me to buy it. And I had like, he's my genius friend, like who's older, millionaire. And he's like, this is going to be the future. And I was like, all right, sure.
How do I buy some?
Coinbase, like,
yep.
So just have always like followed that. And then, recently been just putting a lot more money into Morgan Stanley, like, so more long-term, you know, not as big of yields and, you know, just like a slower growth profile.
With like what, like a private bank team or something? Like yeah. Wealth managers?
Yeah, wealth managers.
What is that conversation like? I would love to hear you talking to them about investing. Are they telling you what to do? Or are you telling them, no, that's a cool plan, but I want to do this other thing? Like, how does that work?
No, they're mostly telling me what to do for like non-risky investments. So,
Take the risk yourself. Like yeah, you go take the risk and then they'll take care of the safe stuff.
Exactly. And they tell me what their game plan is. And I'm like, well, maybe we should tweak it a little bit. But like on that side of things, I'm good at venture capital. I don't really know about the stock market and all that stuff. So that's why I went to them to handle that. And they came like highly recommended. There's like a team of five of them. And we just do calls like every quarter or so. And they're like, all right, we'll put in more money here. We'll put it in there. Da, da, da. This is when the market's going to, we think is going to go like this. And then boom, like.
Did you interview that? Like you were like, hey, I might go with this team or I might go with this team. Or did you just take the first one that somebody had recommended?
No, I got like three different teams that were like highly recommended. And I talked to all of them and they just like fit the best.
Like personality wise.
Yeah, and just like their capabilities and I think like trustworthiness when you're giving someone that much money, you want to feel good about it.
You do a lot of venture investing, and one of the things that founders specifically, they like the idea of, one, if they have investors that they can reach out to and get help for and things like that. Two also is if you've got a big audience like you do, there's advantages, right? When they make the announcement of the fundraise, you've got a name that people recognize, you've got a platform that you can promote them if it's that type of business or whatever. What's your relationship like with the founders? Because you got a lot of shit going on, right? You got a whole team. What is that like when you make investments in some of these companies?
Yeah, so my partner Jeff and I, each company is different, but it just really depends what they need, and sometimes we take a passive role, and most of the time we know whether or not we want to be passive or not. So sometimes we're just money, and you know maybe they call and like need a connection or an intro, like sure, no problem. But then some companies we could like actively really help. And so those ones, it could be, you know, we get advisory. A lot of times we get advisory on top of our investment and we could help them with their marketing or just advice or taking like a consultancy position, helping them with their branding. A lot of times I get on and like tell these people like, all right, this, you could be doing this better on social media. You could be, you know, this TikTok needs to be changed. You need a different editor. You need a better logo. You know, your slogan sucks, like whatever it might be. But we do get active in certain companies where we know we could provide a lot of value. And sometimes I do commercials for them. Sometimes I'll post on my Twitter or my Instagram, you know, backing them. So it really just depends.
I want to ask about three companies specifically. One, you guys bought shares in Endeavor. I think right then was the UFC.
Yeah.
whose idea? Why'd you do it? And did anything actually come out of you guys advocating for them changing stuff?
We did it to be able to be a part of their monthly or I guess it's quarterly update calls, just to like know what's going on with their shareholders and like how much they're paying UFC fighters. Mm-hmm. We were on a call and like someone did bring up that they didn't let us talk, but that someone did.
Shocking.
Yeah. Crazy. Someone did bring up to them like, what about like Jake Paul and paying fighters more, and you need to be paying fighters more. And so there is an actual like,
what was their response?
He just like brushed the question off and was like, we're not doing that right now. Da, da, da. Like just brushed it off like a professional. ducked the question. But I think the idea is like, we're trying to find all of these ways to actually create change, mm-hmm. And attacking it from all angles. And that's really where the idea stemmed from.
Anduril is a company that is kind of very cutting edge, innovative when it comes to defense technologies. I know that you all invested there. What was the thought process? Like, why are you excited about that space?
Yeah, I just thought it's super cool, super futuristic. The founder, Lucky Palmer, like has a ton of track record, history of success. I met him at a party once, and he was just like a super cool guy. We shared interests and hobbies. And
do I want to ask what hobbies and interests?
He collects cars.
Okay.
And so like, I don't have like a big enough garage space yet to collect cars, but like I'm slow. I have kind of a car collection. Like I have like 10 cars, and slowly growing if I can make more space. But when I'm older, I'm going to have like 100 fucking cars.
What's your favorite one?
It's so tough to say.
Are they like classic cars?
Classic cars. Like okay. I love the Thunderbird. I want to get that one day. It's my grandpa had it. And so I was just like, always loved it growing up. But also like supercars too. Like I want the Porsche 918 Spyder. That's like my goal.
What do you drive right on a day-to-day basis?
I mostly drive a Lincoln Navigator, mm-hmm. because it's like more low profile. Mm-hmm. A lot of times if you're like driving around like a fucking Lambo or some crazy shit, like you're just drawing unwanted attention to yourself. And at a certain point of fame, you just do the opposite of draw attention to yourself. You're like, mm-hmm. fuck this. I don't want to be seen by anyone. I don't want 100 people to ask me for pictures, like mm-hmm. tinted windows, car that blends in with everyone. And I'm going to go about my daily business and hopefully no one bothers me.
What about the golf cart? Is it a stock golf cart that you guys ride?
It's technically not stock. I got aftermarket seats. I got a racing stripe down the side. And it's the fastest one, the fastest available one. It goes like 35. It's quick. It's quick. But it's a Polaris Gem. Great vehicle.
In Puerto Rico.
Yes, I'm whipping that shit nonstop.
Yeah. All right. Is it weird being famous? Like when people are coming up to you, do you enjoy it? Or are you now like, hey, that was cool when I was younger, but like it's getting old now? How do you think about the fame?
It all depends. It's definitely weird. Like I forget. Sometimes when I'm in training camp for a while and I'm just like, I don't see a lot of people.
Yeah.
And so like,
you forget you're famous.
I forget. I'll literally go out in public and be like, oh, fuck. Like, like, cause I'm so, you know, alone and by myself in training camp. And then it's like a culture. I don't know. It's like a shock to the mm-hmm. body, mm-hmm. Going out in public like that. And it depends, man. I really enjoy it when it's a kid most mm-hmm. of the time, like when the kids get excited and you could tell they're actually a fan. And, you know, that to me is super cool. It's the people who are like disrespectful or like, mm-hmm. they're not actually your fan. They just want to take a picture to be like, I saw him or whatever. And they could be super rude, man. Mm-hmm. I have like probably one rude encounter with someone anytime I'm in public, like once a day. If I'm in a public area, like on a repeated basis, people just like don't treat you. They think you're a zoo animal and mm-hmm. they're like, come here, like take a picture with me. And like, they don't even say please, or just like demanding it. Mm-hmm. Some people, I've literally like had dozens and dozens of people walk up, boom, take a picture without saying anything. I'm like just standing there, and I'm like, and they just walk away looking at their phone, like, I'm
like, yo, like a zombie.
This fucking real, like, yeah. It's a fucking, I don't know, the NPC or some shit. Like, and no, it doesn't even look at you, just yeah. Looks in the phone, takes the picture, and then just walks away looking at it. Like, I don't know. But man, it's really awesome when I can make someone's day. Yeah. And
do you get people who are like, I don't know, if you go to bars or you're out at night or whatever, you go to a club, an event, whatever, and because they are like, oh, you think you're a boxer, like, I'll fuck you up, and people start talking shit if they're drunk?
It doesn't happen as often as you'd think. Okay. The number one thing that happens is a dude walking, like if we're walking in a public place, mm-hmm. and it's like a crowded area, mm-hmm. let's say like a mall, the number one thing that happens is there's always the dude who's clearly walking the opposite direction that's like, you're a pussy.
And keeps like, walking.
Keeps walking. And like, it's usually like in a group, so you can't, you don't really know like which one said it.
Yeah. You should do what Nate Diaz does. He just like, kind of flexes at everyone.
Yeah. And he's fucking like, man. You
saw the one where the guy
shit.
Is like, drink one up in the air and
yeah.
shit. Right?
Yeah. I don't care. I think it's funny. Like, when they're like, you're a pussy, like, I think most guys, like, I don't need to prove myself. Like, yeah. I'm like, all right, bro. Like, that moment for him in front of his friends, like, made his day, him cooler to his friends, because he said, you're a pussy to Jake Paul and me. Like, I don't care. And I'm not like a hostile person. Yeah. Like, I leave it all in the ring. So
what's the craziest situation you found yourself in from a fame perspective? Whether it's you met somebody, like, I can't believe I'm meeting you, whether it was like, oh shit, let's get the hell out of here. Like, I'm in danger. Like, what's the craziest thing?
I think a moment that stands out was this past New Year's. We were on this boat in St. Bart's, and like, there was just an absurd amount of celebrities on it, like Leonardo DiCaprio, Mike Tyson, Drake, Meek Mill, Little Baby. The list goes on. I forgot. I don't know. There was
just a who's who of the world.
Yeah, and it was like this like casual sort of party. It wasn't like a rager, and so everyone was kind of just talking, and like there was no ego. And we're on this probably. Probably $1 billion yacht, mm-hmm. and it was just kind of surreal. I was like, why the fuck
and people
am I
knew,
here?
And people knew who you were.
Yeah, no, I was chatting with all of them. Had like a really good convo with Drake, and then talked to Mike Tyson for a little bit. And
what's he think about you fighting?
He loves it. He loves he loves me, and I love him. He's such an awesome guy. So much wisdom, and he just. Gives me tons of advice and just support always, and publicly too. He's backed me and talked about my skill, and to me that means the most is like when the legends of the sport are mm-hmm. like, this kid's legit. What he's doing for the sport is great. It's easy to like get lost in the comments and in the sheep hating on you, but the guys like Roy Jones Jr., Holyfield, Tyson. All of the legends have showed love, even Tyson Fury and current active champions, and Anthony Joshua. I was just with him, and he was, you know, singing praises, and that to me means more. And
is there anybody who's a legend in boxing who is like, this is horrible for the sport, like, fuck this guy, that you're aware of at least?
I don't think so. Yeah. I don't think so.
I haven't seen it. Mm-hmm. I don't pay super, super close attention, but like, I don't think there's someone who like you hang your hat on. You're like, that person hates the fact that Jake Paul is bringing attention to boxing.
Yeah, no, I haven't really seen that. Which I guess is like kind of the telltale sign. If your peers respect you, then yeah. That's the most important.
As part of fame, you're still like a relatively young guy. You're married. What's going on? Are girls like hitting you up and like DMing you and shit, or like, what's going on?
Well, Julie and I aren't married, but we look
not married.
We look like we're married, right. Though, damn near.
You but, should just say you're married.
Yeah. Julia, if you're watching this.
Are you going to get married?
Going to get married, yeah. Yeah, probably.
Does she know that, or did she just find that out listening to this?
No. She knows that.
Okay.
She like, has been telling me for the past 3 years.
Is she going to propose to you?
That's what I told her. I was like, if you want to get this done, just get it done.
You better be careful. You're going to, like, your next fight, you're going to be done with the fight, knock some dude out, you're going to turn around, she's going to be proposing to you.
On a knee, that's hilarious. That's hilarious.
But are girls, like, hitting you up and stuff and just doing all the shit that people would expect if you're famous and you're on the internet? Or what's going on?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't look at it, though. Yeah. Like, I think it's more, like, in public. They like try to come up and talk to me, but then Julia just like looks them in the fucking eyes and they go away.
I've met her and it strikes me that she's not playing around.
Yeah, she doesn't play around at all. She's almost fought like 3 girls before.
Really?
She definitely hit 1 girl before.
Could she win in a match?
She's strong as fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's really strong.
Is she gonna be the next?
She's Filipino, uh-huh. And so I always joke that like our kid is gonna be the next Manny Pacquiao. So and she's strong, like, and has long arms. So it's really looking good for my kid in his boxing career.
I'm just wondering if we're gonna see like a card where it's Logan versus someone, you versus someone, and then Julia steps in the ring.
They've like offered her to step in. I don't think she wants to actually box.
Yeah.
But
they've offered her money.
Yeah. Yeah.
She said no.
Yeah.
All right. When we think about kind of moving forward better, you've spent a lot of time on is a business. I think you invested in the initial business, SimpleBet, right? And then you guys also launched Better, which is like a consumer betting app. Why are you spending so much time, money, energy, and frankly, just like attention on something in the betting space?
Yeah. So basically, I want to change sports, mm-hmm. and not just boxing, but just sports in general. And there's so many, that's such a big task, right? Mm-hmm. But I think, and I've always loved sports. I've always loved watching sports, talking about sports with my friends. And I think there's a gap in the market where there's so much room to innovate on like, what would ESPN look like if it was launched today? That in and of itself is like a super intricate conversation. But I think that sports betting and the sports media company that we're creating together can just make sports more fun and make sports better. Also, I've always wanted to like put all my eggs and steam behind a company mm-hmm. since I was 18 years old. I was like, what is my, you know, proper 12? What is my Teremana tequila? You know, what is the 50 cents vitamin water?
Prime.
Yeah, Ciroc, Prime, Happy Dad for the mm-hmm. Nelk Boys. Mr. Beast is doing the food. What is mine? The stars just aligned in so many perfect ways. And I'm a huge believer that like the sports betting industry is like just at its start. Mm-hmm. It hasn't really been made fun for kids my age, to like 21 to 30 year olds. And that's the audience we're trying to make sports betting like a social thing, because me and my friends, we never really talked about sports betting, and it's for a multitude of reasons. It's some states that you're in, it's not legal, right? Mm-hmm. But that's being ahead of the market, right? So that's also a good thing is getting in before 50 states have sports betting legal, and that opportunity growth is massive. And there's, you know, 10 or probably 5 multi-billion dollar companies who, in my opinion, aren't doing that good of a job of getting users and brand affinity. Mm-hmm. The apps are clunky and hard to use. Mm-hmm. And when I first used the Better demo and met Joey, the CEO, I was jumping out of my chair, having fun sports betting for the first time. and making it simple. Like, no one knows about, like, the minus 850, plus 3,000, money line this, over on, like, all of that stuff is just makes the barrier to entry, like, way too hard. And I also just saw so much room to grow there, because I saw these brands who weren't doing a good job, and they were also paying me millions of dollars, just like throwing millions of dollars at my face for what I didn't think was like good promo. They didn't really know how to activate my audience. They didn't listen to me and my creative input when they were throwing me all of this money. And so I just saw how they were misspending money, and saw the opportunity in the market to enter in and just do everything completely different in a vertical that I love, which is sports. And I think that's where, like, the passion has to be there if you're really gonna, like, change the world with a company. And yeah, I guess that, like, in short, is sort of why I'm going all in on better.
You mentioned changing sports. Once you conquer boxing, would you go try to play in the NFL, NBA, golf, like go play some other sport, or what's the plan?
Yeah. I think I could see myself for sure in like 3 or 4 years going and trying to get on an NFL team.
On an NFL team? Sure.
Yeah.
What position?
Slot receiver, most likely, because I'm decently fast enough to be a slot receiver. I can catch, and my height and weight like fits that position the best. And I'd want to score a touchdown. I wouldn't want to be on defense and just like not be able to get a touchdown. So,
would the haters be louder for boxing or are you on an NFL team?
Probably me on an NFL team. I think again, people would be like, "Oh, you can't play football. You're not." People don't think I'm an athlete, like genuinely. So they wouldn't believe or think that I was actually going to go and do that.
Yeah. And then on the business side, like, what do you want your legacy to be? Do you want to be a billionaire? Do you want to build a $1 billion company? Like, what are like the goals or the things that you wake up and you're like, man, it'd be cool to accomplish this?
I think, yeah, the challenge of creating a $1 billion company is like real life, the hardest actual game in the world. Like, it's like real life Monopoly. Mm-hmm. How do you play that game and be successful at it? Mm-hmm. And I've always just wanted to do it because I've always said, if that guy can do it, then why can't I? And I think it's fun to like figure that out. And it's the ultimate challenge, I believe. And that's what gets me excited every day is just having a challenge in front of me, to chip away at slowly. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think there's so much. There's so much that I want to do. I think where my legacy, when I think about my legacy, I think about changing the combat sports mostly, and leaving it in a 10 times better place than where it started, and helping fighters and getting fighters paid more, getting them long-term healthcare, advancing sports science within the sport because of the dangers that surround it. And making sure fighters, you know, continue to have proper health after they're done fighting. Because right now you're just on your own. It's like, oh, you're done fighting, like you get kicked to the curb. And I want to open up more and more boxing gyms. We've opened up 3 already, and working on a couple more as we speak that are being built. Just for kids to be able to go to for free. And that's through my foundation, Boxing Bullies, and helping people get into the sport and fall in love with it because of how it changed my life. I believe it could change so many other people's lives. And then just helping people like Amanda Serrano, who, you know, she was underpaid, you know, is one of the best fighters of all time, but never really got the recognition. And just bringing a spotlight to fighters like her and making her dreams come true has been super fulfilling for me. But yeah, that seems to be the legacy. And I think I would love to like have a family. That to me is really exciting.
Have to be boxers, the kids?
Yeah.
boxing. YouTubers, then boxers, or just skip straight to the boxing?
Just straight to boxing. I'll be their promoter. They'll sell hella pay-per-views just because of their name.
So you'll be like a LeVar Ball.
Yeah, literally, that's exactly who I'll be.
You ever seen the clip where he walks onto the ESPN set and he's got, I think it's LaMelo, maybe, and they're walking there just like, man, that's our dad. Like,
yeah, it's like, can't do anything about it.
And he's walking out there like he's the NBA player.
Yes. Main character energy. Yeah. That is a thing, though, is I would let my kids play basketball.
Basketball
or boxing. Football is just like so much injury.
Yeah.
And you know, you can't even see their face. So it's just not good for branding.
Mm-hmm. You and Logan fight. Who wins?
Me.
He agrees?
I think so. Really? Yeah. I've seen him talk about it on podcasts. And I think he always says like right now he would beat me. But I think if we were to fight, then I would train and then I would come back and win.
How many pay-per-views do you do if you two get in the ring together?
Oh, man.
Is that the biggest fight?
I think it is probably.
Bigger than you and Andrew Tate?
I think it is.
I mean,
No one's ever done it before. No one's ever, like the brothers that both box have never fought each other.
Uh-huh.
The Klitschkos never did it. Charlo brothers haven't done it. And there's a bunch of others. But
is that what you two are fucking scheming up?
Not really. We like talk about it.
Yeah.
And our parents are like, absolutely not. Like they get pissed when we even talk about it. But also like, we got to get the fans what they want, but I'm also not the one who would lose. So he would be the one that would have to live with that result. So if he could do,
are you psychological warfare already?
Yeah. It starts now. Sorry, Logan.
You know Dana White's master plan is to get the Logan brothers or the Paul brothers together in the UFC.
Who knows? That's crazy.
It's the biggest UFC pay-per-view they've ever had.
Yeah. No doubt about that. Maybe that's Dana's plan. I don't know. Who knows what that guy's doing? I smell a retirement soon from him.
You think he's going to retire?
Yeah.
Why?
I think he's just like kind of over it. Like, I don't know. And the UFC is just it's not what it was.
Why not?
I think it kind of already peaked.
You think the UFC has peaked?
Yeah.
Okay, why?
They just don't have like any, they have some stars, like, two, whereas before in like the heydays there was like fucking 30 stars, mm-hmm. 20 stars that could all sell pay-per-views, and now there's different organizations that are competing that have a lot of hope and promise and funding and good fighters, so it's not just like this one place anymore, and there's just also boxing has made a major comeback. So for like 10 years, no one was really raving about boxing.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's this new generation of talent. So there's other combat sports. So no one's just sitting around watching the UFC anymore. There's tons of exciting boxing fights all the time, sometimes on the same night as UFC events. So yeah, I think they peaked with McGregor. Like that was their McGregor versus Khabib. Like that was mm-hmm. the peak. They'll never get anything like that again.
You think McGregor's done?
I don't fucking know. I think he has to come back and fight, but he needs to win. He needs to win.
Will he fight you?
I don't think he will.
Why?
I think my skill level like is outgrowing his in boxing, and I have the height advantage. Mm-hmm. We would weigh the same, but like he can't beat me. And I think he probably knows that. And like time, he's only getting older and I'm only getting better. Mm-hmm. So who knows? And I don't think the risk for him is worth the reward.
Yeah. I do, even if he gets paid $100 million, it's just not worth it.
Yeah. I think he's like, it's not about the money for him really. I don't think anymore.
Yeah. Let's just leave it there. I appreciate you coming in.
100%.
I hope people realize that, one, you're much better at boxing than most people realize, but also you're not a complete moron, as probably many people think. Oh, this is a stupid YouTuber.
Yeah.
So they do.
Keep
it up.
Fuck them.
Fuck them.
I'm laughing to the bank.
Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. I really hope you enjoyed this one. Make sure you're subscribed on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcast player. And if you're looking to transition into a brand new job in the Bitcoin or crypto industry, we've got you covered. Head over to thecryptoacademy.io. My team and I have been working with the top HR teams in the industry to develop an intensive 3-week training program with over 50 live events. We teach you exactly what you need to know to break into the industry, including live interview prep and resume review. Our students have been hired at over 75 of the world's best Bitcoin and crypto companies. Go to thecryptoacademy.io to learn more. Again, that's thecryptoacademy.io. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you share it with your friends, and I'll see you all for the next episode.